You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast right now, as always. Man, before I get into any sports talk, man, let me just talk about this weather that we're having, man. Fall weather is officially here, man. The first day of fall, it just passed on this past Wednesday, the 22nd, man. It was 55 degrees when I got up this morning and walked outside. I was like, man, it's a little nippy out here. I had to grab a jacket. But, man, I love this time of year. Weather is great, man. It's just an exciting time to get some cooler weather. And it is hoodie season. You know, the ladies, or as the ladies like to call it, still a hoodie season or whatever it is. So, fellas, look, guard your hoodies, man. Because the ladies out here are trying to steal those hoodies, man. So, but yeah, like I said, man, it's an exciting time. And as we approach, you know, getting into that holiday season and that holiday feel, man, one of the best times of year. So, but hey, let's go ahead and jump into our sports talk, man. We got some good topics to discuss, good stuff that's happened in the sports world this past week. So, let's go ahead and get into it, man. Let's talk college football first. So let's go and run down the updated college football rankings. So I'm just going to talk about the top 10 rankings right now. I'm not going to go through the entire top 25, but I'm just going to give the top 10 and just give a little recap of one of the most exciting games that we had this past weekend. So the updated college rankings are as follows. So you have Alabama staying tough at number one. You got UGA at number two. They're still standing tough there as well. Oregon is three. Oklahoma is four. Iowa is five. Penn State is six. Texas A&M is seven. Cincinnati is eight. Clemson is nine. And Ohio State is 10. So those are your top 10 rankings so far. So looking at the top 10 rankings, of course, we have the SEC with three teams in the top 10 and seven teams overall in the top 25. So that's huge for the SEC conference, who's actually trying to return to that, you know, that dominance. You know, they had a down few down years, and people were questioning, you know, the SEC, because of course it's Alabama at the top, and then everybody else is what they like to call it. But we have some stronger teams this year, and it's exciting to see the SEC being represented well. So let's talk about, you know, the most exciting game that I felt from this past weekend. And of course, it was the number one Alabama Crimson Tide that went on the road to face number one 11 Florida. They were able to escape the swamp 31-29 in a thriller towards this in the second half of that game. You know, Alabama jumped out to a 21-3 lead, but ended up letting Florida, you know, climb back in the game and had a bad second quarter. And in that second half, it was just back and forth from there. But let's just run down the stats and we'll talk about what each team did as a team. And then we'll discuss some more going forward. So Bryce Young, he went 22 of 35 for 240 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. And he finished with an 89.3 quarterback rating. Brian Robinson Jr., running back, had 15 carries, 78 yards, and a touchdown. Jaleel Billingsley, the tight end for Alabama, had a 26-yard touchdown reception. Now, on the other side, Florida, Emory Jones, he went 18 of 28 for 195 yards, one interception, and he also had 19 carries for 77 yards and a touchdown. Malik Davis had 10 carries, 86 yards, and a touchdown. And Damian Pierce has seven carries, 24 yards, and two touchdowns for Florida. So let's look at what Alabama did as a team. So the Alabama team stats, so they had 331 total yards of offense. 240 of those yards came in the passing game. And they only had 91 yards rushing, which is obviously uncharacteristic, you know, for an Alabama team that is known for running the football. But that's the way the game was going. And they did go 7 of 13 on third down, 1 of 1 on fourth down. They averaged 7 yards a pass, but they only averaged 3 yards per rush. So that front for Florida was really getting a lot of penetration and clogging up those running lanes for Brian Robinson Jr. And so it was making it, you know, difficult to run the football in that game. And so they leaned more towards the pass. Now, the biggest thing, you know, Alabama did have 11 penalties for 75 yards. And they allowed 440 yards of offense to Florida. And 245 of those yards came from rushing. So Florida was able to run the football. Whether that was from the quarterback or the running back, man, they were able to pick apart, you know, the defense when it came to running the ball. Now, let's talk about, you know, a lot of people are questioning Alabama, you know, who's the best team in the country? Who's the best team in the SEC right now? Listen, let's stop the conversation, okay? Alabama is the best team in the country. Alabama is the best team in the SEC. I'm sick and tired of everybody, you know, talking about, oh, Alabama, is, you know, they got exposed, this, that, and the third. Listen, people, listen. The thing that trips me out the most is as if Alabama is not allowed to have a close game. You know, everybody's so used to Alabama blowing everybody out by 30-plus that when they do have a close game like they did this past Saturday, everybody's questioning whether or not they have the talent, whether or not they're elite, you know, whether or not they could be dominant. And it's frankly utterly ridiculous if you ask me. Yes, you know, that Florida made it a tough game. Florida is not one of those opponents that you can obviously take lightly. You know, the Swamp is a tough place to play, you know, and it's going to be a tough place to play all year for anybody that goes into the Swamp. But for Alabama to go in there and come out with a victory, it was big. A win is going to be blowouts. They're not always going to be pretty. At the end of the day, that W is all that matters. And people questioning, you know, Alabama, you know, are they the best in the country? Okay, Alabama, they have two top 25 wins right now, okay? Number 14, Miami, was the first in week one. And then, of course, like I just mentioned, they beat number 11, Florida. Now, the only other teams with two-plus top 25 wins in the country, the only other teams that have two-plus top 25 wins are Iowa, BYU, and Penn State. I don't see any other SEC team in that category. So don't question anything that Alabama has going on. Yes, like I said, despite struggling in the second half, they still won the game. Fatigue, poor tackling, mental errors, a loss of intensity, those were the biggest issues in this game. You know, and the thing about this is these things are all fixable. These are all fixable, and I guarantee you from this point forward, Coach Saban is going to have, you know, this game in the forefront of their minds. You know, they're going to see what happens when you get two lax. You know, you jump out to a 21-3 lead, and you know, and you get comfortable. You know, you have some three and outs on offense. You can't get anything going, and then you allow a team like Florida to stick around. You know, and stuff like that is going to happen. But the biggest thing about it is they were able to show resiliency in a hostile environment. They're still the top dog in college football. People question, you know, Bryce Young. I had a few people, you know, Bryce Young, this, you know, he was a little afraid in the moment. Listen, Bryce Young is fine. He showed incredible poise in the Swamp. He made the right plays. The only thing about Bryce Young is he does have to utilize his legs a little more when he has the opportunity. Specifically late in the fourth quarter when he had an opportunity to run the football in the end zone, but he selected to pass it anyway instead, and he had to settle for a field goal. So, you know, but again, this is his first year starting, and I think that he's doing an exceptional job, and he's only going to continue to get better. And so people pump the brakes about Alabama. We're fine. You know, Alabama is going to be just fine. They're going to get better and continue to grow from this point forward. And for those of you questioning, are they still those guys in that team to beat? They definitely are still that team to beat. And watch. Just continue to watch the season. Don't overreact. It's no panic. Calm down. You know what I'm saying? This is it's all good. And I think that at the end of the day, and I've said this before, you know, the SEC championship game. I'm looking at, you know, a Bama and Georgia in the SEC championship game. Now that Florida and Georgia game, that's going to be huge, as it is every year, to determine who the winner of that game is, the one that always goes, you know, in the East, 9 times out of 10. So that game is going to be, it's going to be critical. And, you know, and one last thing, let's not act like Florida, like I said, Florida is the number one rushing team in the SEC right now. So they ran the football on Alabama. You know, it's Alabama doesn't normally allow that to happen like that. But, you know, when you have running quarter, when you have dual threat quarterbacks, you have solid running backs, you know, they had their day, you know. But again, they're the only team in the SEC that has over 1,000 yards rushing right now. So they're number one in rushing in the SEC. So let's not act like Florida's some scrubs, okay? But let's continue to move on. Let's talk NFL. So the NFL has taunting rules. New taunting rules, but they have been putting more emphasis on the taunting and unsportsmanlike conduct rules this year. So the question here is, you know, is the new NFL taunting rules and emphasis ruining the game? So let's just give a little rundown of, you know, how do we even get here? How do we even get to this conversation in the first place? So let's talk about taunting. So taunting could be anything as simple as spinning the ball at a player, calling another player a bad name or derogatory name, getting in the face of an opponent, throwing a hand signal at an opponent, similar to, you know, as we all remember Tyreek Hill last year throwing up the peace sign when he was, you know, pretty much burning defensive backs the entire year. So taunting is anything that could potentially escalate into a physical confrontation, you know, on the field. Now, owners and coaches raised more awareness of taunting to the league, and they wanted more emphasis on the rule, obviously. Because that's, you know, where this comes about. You have the owners, you have the coaches. You know, they come to, you know, the league, they voice their concerns, X, Y, and Z, and here we are. Now, the rule is already having a major impact on the games. If you already didn't know, let me tell you. There's been 11 taunting calls in week two. Those 11 taunting calls in week two already equal this amount of taunting calls as last season. So all of last year, there were only 11 called. We're in the second week. We've already had 11 called. That's insane. Now, flags for taunting dropped over the past two seasons. So like I said, we've had 11 in 2020 so far. Last year, there were 9. And then there was an average of 30 from 2013 to 2018. Now, if you ask me, this emphasis on the taunting, it takes the fun out of the game, point blank period. You know, players, they're going to show passion. They're going to show excitement after they make big plays. And, you know, it's getting to the point where they're really just throwing the flags to be throwing them. You know, some of these situations, it's not even taunting. It's more so you're celebrating the play, you clap your hands. Like, for example, there was a couple of games where they, you know, players made a big play, they clapped their hands, and, you know, they're getting fired up, and they get a flag for that in a huge play that was just made in a game. You know, that just doesn't make any sense to me. I can understand if you're getting into a player's face, if you're grabbing his face mask, if you're mushing him, you know, X, Y, Z, but I haven't seen that happen. You know, there hasn't been a lot of that, if at all, that has happened this year so far in the first couple of weeks of the season. You know, now, you know, the players were warned about this during the training camp, and they were presented with the league video explaining the new rules and the points of emphasis. So they know, you know, they were aware of this. But it's different. When you get on the field, when you're in the moment, in the heat of the moment, you make big plays and you make a huge stop, you make a huge catch, you make a big run, you're going to show that passion. You know, it's going to happen. And you shouldn't be penalized for that in your own sport. Like, that's it's ridiculous. You know, we have to stop the league. They need to revisit this situation. This has to stop because it's going to ruin really good football games. You know, overall, these calls, they've been excessive and unnecessary. You know, just watch the game, man. I watched my Chicago Bears against the Bengals this past Sunday, man. They called probably about four alone in that game. There were at least three or four that were called in that one game. And it's getting to the point where it's like, okay, we need to really revisit this because I guarantee you, you know, this is something that's going to linger on throughout the entire year. And players are going to become more vocal about it. And I'm pretty sure they're going to get fined about it too for criticizing officials like always. But, you know, the player's voice has to be heard about, you know, in the situation. I know the coaches. And look, I get it, okay? I get, you know, there's kids that watch the NFL. They don't want to promote, you know, taunting and all of that. But there's a fine line between that. We know when it's going over the top versus, you know, a player just being excited and showing passion at the end of the day. So I don't know what they need. They need to just have a meeting, whatever they need to do. But to have as many in two games, taunting calls I'm talking about, to have as many in two games that you had all last season, that's crazy. That already tells you something right there. Can you just imagine in a playoff game or in a critical moment of maybe a team is needing a clinch or they needing to win this game to get in the playoffs, or we're in the playoffs, or even the Super Bowl, and there's a huge play that happens and somebody gets flagged for taunting, for clapping their hands, for spinning the football. Like, come on, man. For real. Like, they need to revisit this for real. So let's move on. I said my piece. You know, I hope somebody hears me. Anybody. but let's stay in the NFL, man. Lamar Jackson, man, he got his first win against Patrick Mahomes. So are the Ravens the biggest threat to knock off the Chiefs in the playoffs? So let's talk about what Lamar Jackson and the Ravens accomplished on this past Sunday night. So the Ravens defeated the Kansas City Chiefs 36-35. Lamar Jackson, again, like I said, he gets his first win against Patrick Mahomes. He now is 1-3 against Mahomes. And Lamar in this game, he went 18-26, 239 yards, one touchdown, and he threw two picks, both to Tyrann Mathieu. One of those was a pick six early in the game, and then another one he threw was actually in the red zone when they were driving. He threw a pick in the red zone. So Lamar, let's talk about, you know, how a milestone that Lamar is actually closing in on right now. So he had his ninth career 100-yard rushing game. So he's currently tied with Mike Vick for the most by a quarterback. So Lamar Jackson is going to break, you know, Mike Vick's record for 100-yard rushing games as a quarterback this year. You know, that's going to be a huge he might, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say he'll break it next week. He's going on the road to face the Detroit Lions, you know, a favorable matchup. And I think that he gets that record broken, man, and improves his 10th career 100-yard rushing game. So with their 251 yards rushing on Sunday night, the Ravens have 41 consecutive games with at least 100 yards rushing. The Steelers currently hold the NFL record at 43 consecutive, and this was from 1974 to 1977. So we also have another record that could be broken this year. So they're currently at 41. They got two games to go to be able to do that. So we'll see if the Ravens can overtake the Steelers for those consecutive games with at least 100 yards rushing. Now, Lamar, you know, Lamar Jackson, he's continuing to grow. He's continuing to evolve. The Ravens offense, you know, obviously they're still, you know, going through some things without having J.K. Dobbins out there without having Gus Edwards. As we all know, they both were down after tearing their ACL in training camp, obviously. And you also, you know, you've had a few other injuries across the board as well. And they've also, Rashad Bateman, their draft pick, their wide receiver out of Minnesota, he also isn't there as well. He's currently on IR. But despite all of that, Marquise Brown, a.k.a. Hollywood Brown, Sammy Watkins, you know, Mark Andrews, Tyson Williams, who's a running back that's filling in right now, taking on that RB1 role. You know, they've been solid. They've been solid for the Ravens offense, man, and they've been able to be productive. You know, Tyson Williams has shown, you know, that he can run the football. He came up big on the road in Las Vegas, and he's continuing to have, you know, some solid performances. You know, now, are the Ravens the biggest, you know, threat and all this to the Chiefs? No, I'm not going to say that. You know, I'm not going to say that. The Ravens defense is still the biggest concern. You know, they gave up over 400 yards for the second consecutive week. You know, in week one, they gave up 491 yards to the Raiders. You know, the Ravens defense, you know, they're also giving up over 30 points a game. You know, it's second game in a row, giving up over 30 points. Now, the Ravens, like I said, their defense is a question mark. They lost their safety, Deshaun Elliott, to a concussion in this past game, and they're already without Marcus Peters for the year with the torn ACL. So I do think that, you know, while that offense is clicking and while Lamar has full control and command of, you know, everything that's going on with that offense, I do think that with that defense that they have that are you know, getting scored on, you know, and giving up 30 a game, that's going to come back and haunt you, you know, because you're putting a lot of pressure on your offense to have to score at least 40 to win the game. So they're going to have to really buckle down and play better defense if they're going to want to be serious, you know, contenders to beat Kansas City. Do I think that they could beat Kansas City again? Yeah, I do think that they're capable of beating them again. But you're not going to trade touchdowns with Patrick Mahomes and those guys, you know, consecutively, and not think that, you know, that's gonna come back and haunt. And, you know, obviously Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, they were driving, he fumbled the ball. So, you know, things did go in the Ravens' favor. And but the biggest thing that I really enjoyed in that game, you know, late in that game, it was fourth and one. The Ravens had the ball, and Coach Harbaugh, you know, he's yelling across from the sidelines, he's yelling across the field to Lamar. He's like, "Hey Lamar, you wanna go for this?" Lamar's like, "Yeah." And he said, "Okay, we're going." You know, that's that trust in your starting quarterback that you love to see. And to have a guy like Lamar Jackson, who's not afraid of any moment, who's not going to shy away from the lights, you know, those bright lights. He's going to put a lot of pressure on defenses like he already has. And I think that, you know, as he continues to grow, you know, a lot of people talk about the things that he can't do. Oh, he can't pass the ball. You know, he all he can do is rely on his legs. He's shattered all of those critics, man, that have anything bad to say about Lamar Jackson. He can throw the ball. He can utilize his legs and make the smart football play. You know, he has a tremendous amount of talent, and as he continues to grow in this offense, he's going to elevate. And I'm excited to see, you know, where the rest of his career takes him, man. And he's going to – it's nowhere else to go but up, and he's continuing to improve each and every year. So I do think that the Ravens can make the playoffs for sure. So we'll continue to watch that, man. Let's take it to the NBA, man. So let's talk Ben Simmons. So Ben Simmons is not going to report to the 76ers training camp that's actually going to start. It started this week. And he doesn't plan to play another game for the team. So let's talk thoughts about this. So how did we even get here? Simmons and the 76ers, obviously, you know, we know they've had some friction built up over time, you know, in regards to his role with the team and his on-the-court play. You know, Simmons didn't show up in the biggest moments in the playoffs, man. You know, specifically in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals against the Atlanta Hawks. He decided to pass up on a wide-open dunk or layup opportunity with 4 minutes left. He dished it to Thibault, and, you know, a lot of people were criticizing him about that. Obviously, you know, Joel Embiid had something to say about it. Everybody was wondering what was happening. I mean, I was shocked that he did it. Now, Simmons, you know, he became a liability in the series. You know, bad free throw shooting. He had to be taken out of the game, you know, late in critical moments because they were, you know, opting to foul him and put him on the free throw line because they knew he couldn't make the free throws. You know, it just became a disaster and a nightmare for Doc Rivers in the 76ers. So, you know, after the game, when asked if Simmons could be a championship-level point guard, Doc Rivers said, "I don't know the answer to that." Now, Simmons has shown that unwillingness to shoot, you know, and it's really hurt him on the court. It's hurt the team. You know, he has not developed the type of jump shot that they need him to develop. You know, he has to be effective for just, and it doesn't even have to be three-pointers. Just develop a mid-range game. That's all they're asking you to do is develop a nice mid-range jump shot. Now, you could put pressure on defenses. You know, they're going to have to respect the fact that you can shoot and you're going to be able to create more opportunity, you know, for your teammates. But there's a situation now where I feel like, you know, Simmons, he's throwing a tantrum and he's upset because they're asking him to shoot the ball. And he doesn't want to shoot the ball. He wants to facilitate, you know, rightfully so, it's a point guard. I get it. He wants to be the point guard. He wants to be that guy that can, where the offense runs through him, but it's not going to be that way. You got Joel Embiid there, so offense is going to run through Joel Embiid. But you can't be passive, man. You got to be aggressive, and you have to develop a shot. You have all this time in the offseason to work and get a jump shot. You know, in the one or two times that we've seen him hit a three, you know, he could have improved that part of his game. You know, along we've seen Giannis go out here and improve his shot. So if Giannis can do it, why can't Ben Simmons do it? Giannis doesn't always take the best shots now, but he will knock down a three or two. He'll knock a couple of them down in the game now, and he'll knock a couple of jump shots down. So if Giannis can do it, there's no excuse for why Ben Simmons can't do it. Now, Simmons is under contract for four more seasons. He's 25 years old, three-time NBA All-Star, two-time All-Defense. You know, obviously, you know, he can be effective. They can win with him, but right now, you know, he's just not the piece that they need. You know, they just, and you know, Doc Rivers has come out since and said, "Hey, we can win with Ben Simmons," because obviously they don't want to let him go. But if he doesn't want to play there, there's no point of keeping him there. You could get some stuff back. Now, they do need to cut it out with all of this. You know, we need four first round picks and all this. They want at least four picks and a couple of players. They're not getting all of that for Ben Simmons, okay? They need to stop. That organization needs to cut it out. They're not getting all of that for Ben Simmons, okay? Reduce that price. Go with the best offer and keep it moving. You're not getting all of that for Ben Simmons right now. Ben Simmons has not shown that he's worth all of that draft capital. So let's stop. Cut it out. It's done. Now, the 76ers, if they do trade him, when they do trade him, it's going to be the whoever gives up the most for him. You know, he's not going to get traded where he wants to get traded. That's the fact of the matter. This isn't a situation where he's going to dictate, I want to go to the Lakers or I want to go to the Clippers. And they say, okay, Ben, we'll do that for you. That's not going to happen. He will get shipped to wherever they feel is necessary, wherever they feel is going to give them the best offer. Period. That's how this works. When you're under contract and stuff, you don't have, there is no say-so in where you go. You know, obviously they're going to express their preferred destinations, but like it's like Charles Barkley even came out and said, he said, look, you know, I'm not trading you where you want to go. You don't want to play for us. I'm not trading you where you want to go, period. Like, that's it. So we'll see where he goes, man. There's some destinations out there that, you know, where he could fit. Maybe, you know, he'll have a better role and he can be more effective in a different type of offense. But this offense that's requiring him to have to, you know, be able to shoot the ball, he's running away from it, obviously. And he's being stubborn about the situation. So, you know, maybe it's just with him and Doc Rivers, it's just not that connection there. You know, sometimes that happens. So maybe somebody else could help him get his shot better. And last but not least, man, let's talk NFL again. Justin Fields. Let's talk my boy Justin Fields, man. He's going to get his first career start this upcoming Sunday on the road in Cleveland against the Browns. So, question here, man. If Justin Fields balls out against the Browns, should he remain the starter even if Andy Dalton gets healthy? So let's backtrack a little bit here. So with Andy Dalton out, you know, he went out with his knee injury. Fields, you know, he came in last week in the game. He played, what was it, mid-second quarter all the way through the end of the game. He went 6 of 13 for 60 yards. He threw an interception. He also had 10 carries for 31 yards. Fields actually made a huge run to convert a 3rd-and-9 late in the fourth quarter to secure the win for the Bears. Now, there were a few plays where Fields, you know, he put the ball right on the money. Wide receivers, unfortunately, they dropped them. Darnell Mooney was on a crossing route going toward the sidelines. He dropped one and hit him right in the fingertips. Allen Robinson dropped one going up the sidelines heading into the end zone. Dropped right into his lap and he dropped it, could not pull it down. So people can say whatever they want about Justin Fields, but he showed great poise and he got the job done. Like I said, he threw an interception. That's what's gonna happen. You know, he's a rookie, mistakes are gonna happen. You know, let's look at Zach Wilson, who threw 4 interceptions in one game against New England. Does anybody have anything to say? You know, it's rookie mistakes. That's what happens. Trevor Lawrence is throwing interceptions. Mac Jones, excuse me, he's gonna throw interceptions too. I believe he might already have an interception, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But it's gonna happen. Rookie mistakes are going to happen. But like I said, man, despite throwing that interception, he came back. You know, he had a short memory. He was facing pressure. He was able to keep his balance. He got a first down. That helped secure the win for the team. That's huge. He did have some situations where he, you know, they had some, you know, false start penalties because he was leaning, the cadence was off a little bit, but that's naturally going to happen. We're talking about Justin Fields, who hasn't had practice with the ones. You know, he hasn't been practicing with the starters. He didn't even play with the starters in preseason. So right now, with the full game week of preparation with the starters, I believe Justin, he's going to ball out. You know, I think that he's going to have a really good game, you know, from the air and with his legs. If Fields shines on the road against the Browns, he should remain a starter, even if Andy Dalton gets healthy over the next few weeks. Even if Andy Dalton comes back, because right now they're saying that it's about a 3-week window, 3, maybe 5-week window with that knee. I don't care. If Justin Fields is balling out consistently, you know, then he has the Lions at home after that. If he's balling out, You don't take Justin Fields out in favor of Andy Dalton. You don't do it. You let Justin Fields stay in. You let him continue to build his confidence up, continue to get in that rhythm. Because I guarantee you now, people, watch what happens now that he's had practice and reps with the starters. Watch. It's going to be totally different. He was asked about this. He said, you know, he's ready. He's ready for this. He said, look, he's been preparing for this moment all his life. And I get so tired of everybody, you know, having this conversation about, oh, you know, Nagy, you know, he's not going to put him out there if he's not ready. Who is ready when you put them out there? Nobody. Nobody's ready. Tom Brady wasn't ready. Peyton Manning wasn't ready. Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Trevor Lawrence, they're all not ready. They're all not ready to just be elite when you first put them in there. You have to develop that over time. You have to get a rhythm under you. Look, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a couple of weeks. But over the course of a season, as you get a better feel for the game, hey, Patrick Mahomes wasn't ready to be elite like he is now. When they threw him out there, he had to get comfortable. He had to find his way, and that's what it's all about. And I think that we oftentimes, you know, when it comes to Justin Fields, everybody is they have a different type of opinion about him versus all the other rookie quarterbacks. And I feel like, you know, Justin Fields could easily be the best quarterback out of this rookie class. And you don't want to handicap his talent and what he brings to the table. And I obviously get you don't want to just throw him, you know, out there to the wolves. There's two sides to it. You don't want him to get hurt. You know, you don't want him to not get hurt, but you don't want his confidence to be shot. You know, like Zach Wilson, you throw four picks in the game. You don't want stuff like that to happen. Obviously, this is a different situation because Andy Dalton is injured. So he has to come in. And anybody who says, oh, we need to throw in Nick Foles, I don't have anything to say about that. I have nothing to say to you about that's not going to happen. So let that idea die. But, yeah, I think that with Justin Fields, you know, being as poised as he is and as confident in himself, and he puts in the work and the preparation, and he's been shining in practice and showing these guys that, you know, he's ready to take that next step. You know, this is his time to show that, man. And I think that we'll get a good display, and this is going to be a really good defense that he's going up against in Cleveland. You know, they haven't necessarily shown the best in the first couple of weeks of the season, but they still have all the talent across the board, and they're still a very talented defense. So it's going to be exciting to see what Nagy calls and what's the game plan going to be, because I think it's going to be totally different versus when you have Andy Dalton. You get a lot more play action. You get a lot more of getting Justin Fields out of the pocket, on the run, making plays with his legs, and also you know, throwing a deep ball. We hadn't seen a lot of deep balls being thrown down the field until Justin got in the game. He started taking shots. We hadn't seen that with Andy Dalton. He hadn't thrown a pass over like over like 15 yards. So you get so much more that you can do with Justin. So hey, I'm telling y'all, if he balls out, he's gonna remain that starter. Nagy's not going to say it right now, but he knows deep in his heart he'll remain a starter if he shows that he's meant to be there, and I think that he will. But, hey, man, that's all I have for y'all, man. I appreciate everybody, you know, jumping in as always, giving me some of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk. I appreciate all the love and support. Hey, man, remember, you know, like the podcast, share it, subscribe, write a review. You know, you see me, I'll be posting it on Instagram, on Twitter, Facebook. Make sure, you know, you tell somebody about it. I would greatly appreciate that, man, and help me to get this thing out here, man, and get more people to listen in and tune in. But, hey, I appreciate everybody again. I'll be back next week to give y'all some more sports talk. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Peace, love, and roll tide.